Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the July NJEDA Board Meeting. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Please be advised today's meeting is being recorded. When the chairman opens the public comment portion of the meeting, members of the public attending by phone will be advised to press one, then zero on your telephone keypad to be placed in queue to speak and provide comment. You will be asked to provide your name and any organization which you are affiliated. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the one-zero command. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the numbers. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star, then zero. I would now like to turn the conference over to Chairman Terry O'Toole. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. I'd like to call the meeting to order. Tim, could you read the open public meeting notice?
Morning, Chairman. In accordance with the Open Public Meeting Act, notice of this meeting has been sent to the Star-Ledger and the Times of Trenton at least 48 hours prior to this meeting, and a meeting notice has been posted on the Secretary of State's bulletin board at the Department of State.
Thank you, Tim. Manera, could you call the roll?
Yes.
Chairman Terrence O'Toole.
Present.
Vice Chair Charles Carlo.
Here.
Kenya Bauer.
Here.
Maxiel Ferrara.
Here.
Marcia Morley.
Here.
Robert Shimko.
Here.
Fred Dumont.
Here.
Aaron Cruz from the Executive Branch.
Here.
Aaron Binder for State Treasurer Elizabeth Moyer.
Here.
Manuel Polino for Commissioner Justin Zimmerman.
Here.
Michael Marich for Commissioner Angelo.
Here.
Elizabeth Dragon for Commissioner Sean LaTourette.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Manera. The next item is the approval of the previous month's minutes. There is one set of meeting minutes for approval today from the June 12, 2024 regular meeting minutes. Any comments, questions? Hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve? And please state your name for the record. We're making a motion. Motion to approve?
I'll move it. Motion.
Thank you. Jenny, is that a second?
Yes, please.
All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, the minute meeting are approved. Just some brief remarks from the chair. Good morning. Welcome to the July board meeting. Today's agenda illustrates the innovative approach the NJEDA employs in its efforts to advance economic development that benefits New Jersey residents from all backgrounds and parts of the state. This includes programs and projects that will uplift businesses and their employees, drive innovation in emerging industries, and transform communities. One particularly noteworthy item the board will be asked to consider today is the authority's entry into a memorandum of understanding with Rutgers to begin an outreach and education program to raise awareness of employee stock ownership programs, otherwise known as ESOPs. Identified by Governor Murphy's Wealth Disparity Task Force as a means to help New Jersey employees build generational wealth, ESOPs have been employed by thousands of businesses across the country and offer the potential to elevate New Jersey businesses and help close the retirement savings gap for communities of color. The next phase of this initiative will include the creation and issuance of a request for proposal, RFP, by the NJEDA in the coming months to identify employee ownership consulting services firms to provide support to eligible New Jersey businesses considering taking on an ESOP ownership structure. Today's agenda also includes consideration of a $100,000 grant to fund an award for the winner of a Founders and Funders All-Star competition. Hosted twice each year, venture capital investors are invited to meet with a predetermined group of companies for 10-minute one-on-one sessions to discuss strategy, business models, and funding opportunities. Since its inception, more than 400 companies and 260 investors have participated in 16 Founders and Funders events. Recent events have featured startups across the life sciences, finance, technology, and clean energy industries, with more than 50% of startup attendees being diverse or women-led businesses. Additionally, the event has facilitated nearly 3,000 formal meetings and countless other informal conversations. Selection for the All-Stars event will be offered to the first 30 prior founders and funders participants that complete the intake form and meet all eligibility requirements. Following the one-on-one pitch session between founders and funders, investors will score each pitch to identify the three highest scoring startups by evaluating them through a standard scorecard. The three highest startups will have the opportunity to pitch to the full audience of attendees, who will then evaluate the startups using the same criteria based on vote by text. The winner will receive a grant of $100,000. I view this as our version of Shark Tank. Also today, the board will be asked to consider the award of a nearly $1.2 million grant under the Activation, Revitalization, and Transformation, or ART program, to a project that will transform an Atlantic City neighborhood with the creation of 13 new housing units and associated retail and office space. The project, located at 14 and 20 South Tennessee Avenue, will include a common courtyard between the two buildings that will serve as a place to gather and connect with residents and the greater community. 20% of the project's residential units will be designated affordable. As evidenced by these initiatives and others in the pipeline, the NJEDA, under the board's guidance, is approaching economic development with responsiveness and creativity, with the goal of elevating communities and quality of life for all New Jerseyans. And now, over to Tim for the CEO report.
Thank you, Chairman. I want to extend my appreciation to you for lots of things, but this morning, top of mind is freeing us from the requirement to be in jackets and ties for this meeting. It's recognition of the extreme heat. I'm not sure I've ever done a board meeting outside of a suit and tie, and then I remembered the 18 months of reading from home, in which I did them mostly in my sweatpants. So a little bit of a reverse to the mean, I suppose. A few things to get through, and we have a package in today, so I'll try to be relatively brief, but I have a fair bit that I want to get through as well. You have my written report, and you have the board dashboard. I'll highlight a few elements of those. I want to spend a couple minutes walking through budget and legislation impacting the EDA that was passed and signed, in some cases signed, at the end of June, early July. But just generally, you know, it continues to be, time's flying. We're halfway through the year. We've had a really productive year so far. The month of June and early July, busy time in state government in general with the budget, lots of bills being passed and lots of convenings. I had the privilege yesterday to be in Atlantic City where, golly, it was hot, and attended the New Jersey State Building and Construction Trades Council, had a chance to say a few words to the membership, which I really appreciated. President Mullen and the team for inviting me down, ratifying and memorializing and reflecting upon the fact that I think under Governor Murphy's leadership we've shown consistently that it's a false choice to whether you can support labor and support economic growth and support diversity. You can do all those things at the same time. Not everything is perfect, but a real commitment in that direction under this governor and sort of this board and this authority. I know Robert's still at the conference. I think we've double-booked you with the governor, so please don't tell the governor that you're down to our board meeting if you're missing his comments this morning. I know he's down there. I'm invited to speculate the labor commissioner is there as well, so it was a great gathering yesterday. We also had, speaking of Atlantic City, and then Asbury Park in Newark, the second iteration of North Shore went off really well, or came together really well through the month of June. Lots of great acts, lots of tickets sold, lots of foot traffic, lots of happy restaurants and bars and vendors and, you know, small businesses that are in those communities that were supported by the event, plus lots of community arts organizations that got grants through that funding. I'll come back to this in a moment, but that initiative was funded again in this budget that the governor just signed. That's one element I want to highlight, and a shout-out to Michelle and the team and our DEI team and our events team. We worked with the African-American Chamber of Commerce to bring a group called AfroTech to do an event in Newark on the Friday of the last weekend of the festival, really focused on inclusive innovation and growing our Black and Latino and communities of color innovation and entrepreneurship community. So a good example of using our dollars strategically, not just to program fun events, but also to do and continue to advance our various missions. A couple things, and Danielle or in your host compass. Yeah, we can go to the slides. Wanted to do a quick walkthrough and do budget first. Okay. Do the other one first. Thank you. Great news on the budget, and shout out to Treasurer and Aaron and everyone, and of course the governor and the governor's office for their incredible support for the things we're trying to get done here at the Economic Development Authority. I won't go line by line through this because I don't intend to torture you, but the good news is lots of continued funding. That's $283 million of funding across a variety of initiatives. The good news, too, is if you look at, and if you were doing sort of a check marks of things you've seen before or might have seen before, you have pretty high fidelity to continuing initiatives and not a ton of new things. reasonable person might look at our product offerings and look at our, you know, efforts in the last couple years and say, golly, that's a lot. Are you spreading yourself too thin? Are you, do you have too many things going on? I think we're good, but a reasonable person could certainly ask those questions. Most of these things are continuations. Almost all of them are continuations of things that we're doing. So continuing to fund Main Street, for example, bring us very close to $250 million of funding for that since the Economic Recovery Act. Strategic Innovation Centers, we had one of those this morning with NJ Fast. Child care facilities improvements, continuing to fund that program. That's federal funding. The work of Mom is continuing manufacturing. We do continue the Arts and Innovation Festival. That last one thing, North Shore next to it, because that is the pledge of language ring fence for NJ PAC to continue North Shore. Continuing the Wealth Disparities Initiatives work that Brianna will talk about in a few minutes, continuing innovation fellows. One new item here is the AI Innovation Challenge, something the governor talked about in his budget address back in February, March, whatever that was. And this is part of, and Chairman, you mentioned sort of Shark Tank earlier. Think Shark Tank times publicly available data times entrepreneurs that are focused on AI and using public data to solve public challenges. So is there some AI solution to wait times at the Motor Vehicle Commission? I don't know. Is there some solution to, you know, approval times for various applications here or other places? Probably. So using that as some chum in the water to support that. Those initiatives as well. Continued funding for cannabis as well, an additional $5 million to support our work around supporting cannabis entrepreneurs. We had some discussion about that in the public comment period at our last meeting. And then events, attraction, and marketing is one big item on the agenda that is kind of new. It's a continuation. You can look forward to some World Cup-oriented discussion around that money at some point in the next 6 months or so, as that is intended to support activations around what will start happening in 2026, both in North Jersey, where the finals will be, and in South Jersey, where Philly hosts the League A games as well. So lots of things ahead for those of you who are football fans, soccer fans, or games. So lots on budget. I can pause there real quick. Any questions on budget, money? Again, it was a challenging budget. A lot of hard decisions had to be made. Some of these numbers are lower than they were in previous years, but the good news is we don't have to, certainly not going to bounce any checks on anybody. We'll probably have to calibrate a few things. For example, manufacturing, that's probably enough for us, a relatively small third round of that program, not a full-fledged third round of that program, but that continues to be an incredibly impactful initiative. Questions, comments, thoughts on budget, money, matters? Next slide is a bit of a legislative review. I should note that some of these bills that are on the screen.
We're just having some technical complications.
Here we are. There were 8 bills or so that we were tracking that ended up being passed by the legislature. Some of them have not been signed yet by the governor. Of course, we don't comment on pending legislation, except when we do. But if I'm mentioning them this morning because we're supporting them. Do you think this gets solved in the next moment, or should I keep going? What do we think? 30 seconds. Guaranteed for 30 seconds. There is, in fact, a one-pager for those of you in the room that if you want to read along, and I'll keep going. Probably the most noteworthy from a net new perspective is the Next New Jersey program around AI. This is going to leverage about $500 million of unused Aspire and Emerge credit.
There we go.
That was 30 seconds. That was pretty good. on time, under budget. The Next New Jersey program for artificial intelligence investments. This is a program, first of all, the governor hasn't signed the bill yet, so incorporate that by reference into. We'll see how this plays out, but I'm optimistic. It's a bill we were pushing pretty hard. That'll get signed. This is really important for driving New Jersey's competitive positioning in AI, and particularly around high-end AI-focused data centers. There are many states that have data center initiatives or data center subsidies, and that's fine, all well and good. This is, I think, substantially more strategic and collaborative with the industry. The basic premise of this program were it to be signed, and when we come here, if it's signed, we'll have to come here to do rules, so we'll have plenty of opportunities to dwell on the details here, but next thing, yes, we will support and provide tax credits around, you know, capital investment in AI-focused data centers. But in exchange for that, not only do we want to force the jobs and we want, you know, good wages for the folks who are going to build those centers and all the things we would ask for in a normal program or a traditional program, we're going to ask our AI partners to form a collaboration to enable the computing power that comes out of these data centers be made available at discount, free, somewhere in between, at least a preferred basis for New Jersey startups, for New Jersey universities, because one of the things that's a rate-limiting factor on the growth, not as a great big company. If you're a great big company, you have as much data access as you need. You know, God bless, Godspeed. If you are a startup that is focused on leveraging AI, there are folks who are, it's like, you know, ice hockey space in New York City. There are people who are, you know, taking reservations at 3 o'clock in the morning for 2 hours of access to computing power, and that's when they can do it. It's a real rate-limiting factor. So this would be a strategic advantage, not just for to build the data centers and create those jobs and do all the things that attract that capital investment, but also to partner with these companies to drive a strategic advantage for New Jersey startups, New Jersey researchers, New Jersey universities. So that we're particularly excited about. On the bottom of the list is Fred and I were offlining before the meeting talking about New Jersey Transit. The governor announced this in early June, late May, a partnership that is now formalized and in statute. This one was signed that appropriates $65 million to the EDA to purchase certain properties, we haven't decided which ones yet, from New Jersey Transit to spur transit-oriented development, so we would buy them. New Jersey Transit gets a fair price for the fair market value price for those properties. We would turn around and seek to develop them. New Jersey Transit also, New Jersey Transit would also get a negotiated but transparent participation in the upside of those properties. So if we take this property and turn it from silver into gold, they would get to participate into those revenues. So it's not only an upfront infusion of some money to New Jersey Transit, certainly needs it, but also a long-term potential funding.
So that's not on top of the property purchase price.
So, you know, in argument's sake, we buy a property for $10 million, we sell it for $20 million, Transit gets some of that incremental $10 million.
Right.
Or we long-term lease it, they get a stream of payments, depending on how we structure it. That's 5 to 15 years of support. Each one of these properties is deeply complex. Lots of opportunities, but other bills that were passed is a significant, pretty significant overhaul of the historic and brownfields programs. We'll be back to revise the rules according to that. The film and digital media credit also got some tweaks and fixes of some issues that have been identified over the years. Over the years since the last time we did a fixed bill in the film program, a modest but important change to the Child Care Revitalization Act to enable the Phase 2 program set to launch to operate a little bit more ease of use for the applicant pool, which are the home-based centers, and then a continuation of. Sort of jumping around here, but on ERG and GROW, one is extending the Patterson-focused ERG application window and completion window. Those projects have been stalled, and there's a bespoke tax credit that exists out in there. There's a likely project on that first part of calendar 25. And then GROW, GROW here is expanded to the legacy programs, so GROW, BEEP, BRAG, some of those are legacy tax credit programs. You might recall in the Economic Recovery Act, the incentives bill that signed in early 2021, we reset the in-person requirements to 60%. However, those were also subsequently essentially waived for a period of now almost 3 years where folks did not have to have an in-office presence. The new permanent, we hope, reset is that 60% now applies in, for lack of a better word, cities. It's more technical than that, but basically, you know, places with high population and high distress. You got to come back to the office up to 60%, at a minimum of 60%. If you're not in one of those handful of places, so think, you know, Jersey City, Newark, Camden, Patterson, Trenton, a handful of other places, you can opt into a 40% occupancy requirement, but you have to extend your commitment to the state, and you have to make a contribution to a small business support fund of some sort. So that's hopefully the permanent reset of all those legacy programs. The last thing I'll mention has not been signed yet either. Urban growth and signs, historic has not been signed yet either. Is that the CPACE program, which we've talked about in committees a few times, getting revved up to come for full approval, had a loophole or a carve out for some reason for prevailing wage from those projects. There's a bill on the governor's desk, he has not signed it yet, that would close that loophole and impose or require prevailing wage on all CPACE items. TBD how that plays out. Signatures and such will hopefully be back to the board in September with the program approval. But it does not make sense to advance that program until this question gets resolved. That was a lot. Take a deep breath and ask if there's any questions, comments, concerns, thoughts. If you would wish the governor to sign or not, that's something I'm the wrong vessel to channel those comments into. But speak to Aaron. Carry something up back up the street when you're done here.
You tell us.
But anyway, lots of good things. Most of these things are, almost all these things are things we were working on trying to get done. It's a great partnership with the legislature, by the way. Shout out not just to the Senate president and the speaker, but lots of members. Senator Gopal on the film side, Historic and Brownfields was Majority Leader Ruiz, and Budget Chair Pinter Marin, Senator Lagan on the CPACE bill, AI was Senator McCurgy, and Assemblyman Tully, Harrisonburg County, by the way. And so lots of great partnership with the legislature up and down the board. Senator Majority Leader Ruiz on the child care bill as well. Thanks. We have one more item. I'm going to go to Clark. That's okay. If there's questions on legislation, questions on bills, lots going on. Never a dull moment around here. So if you want to ask Clark, you want to talk about a few things, particularly the NOL program.
Oh, sure. I can go a little bit deeper in there. Yeah, good morning, everyone. Clark Smith, Director of Technology Innovation Products. Plans to do brief overview, touching on highlights, so you guys can have an idea of the department and where we're at today. And hopefully the format's engaging and insightful for you. So what I'm going to run through, who we are, what we do, who we work with, and how we do it. So if we go on to the team here, after me, we have Monica, our manager, Sarah and Christopher, our senior officers, right-hand sign, Faria and Abdu, plus our interns, Syed, Varun, and Daniela. I think what's interesting for our team, our analysts were actually interns. Moving on to the what. So I split the what into two parts. The first is some feature aspects on a few of our programs here. They're listed out, what we'll touch on, starting with NJ Accelerate. So here, we partner with best-in-class accelerator programs, and we support their graduates that come to New Jersey. It's a pilot program. The pilot ends this year, so expect to hear more in the near future on the program. And when we're talking about an accelerator, that's basically a supercharged business education for startups. As of today, we have 11 approved accelerators in our program. We doubled that in the last year. Listed out some eligibility criteria for both a partner accelerator and what the graduates would have to meet to leverage the program. And the program has three benefits. We have funds that are available for accelerators to hold events in New Jersey. We have funds available for graduates to rent here in New Jersey. And then we have funds available to match the accelerator's investment in those companies. We're about to pass $1 million in notes invested in companies. Currently, 6 companies are in the portfolio, plus 2 more that are approved and in the closing process. And I wanted to just highlight a couple of the approved accelerators. We have Larry's Labs, that's in New York City, has Global Flair, MDSS.
You said Larry's Labs, and I was like, that is a really hooky name.
Larry's Labs.
No disrespect to Larry's in the world.
MDSS. Yeah.
You know Larry's Labs, you get a dishwasher and an
that's the
accelerator.
That would be a consumer product, probably. So we have MDSS, which is Merck Digital Science Studios. That's in Newark in Boston. It's run by NJIT on behalf of Merck, McKesson, and North Pond Ventures. It focuses on digital innovations for the pharma industry. And then the last one I threw up there was Hacks, based in Newark as well. Hard tech focused, was one of our first strategic innovation centers. And then the next is actually a sampling of the companies that come out of there that we've done convertible notes for. So from Larry's, there's Magic Kids. It's an ed tech mobile platform, immersive educational games for kids. MDSS with Steinmar One. They're implementing AI into the management of the drug development process for Big Pharma. And then from Hacks, there's Tandem. They have multiple products that actually electrify tractor trailers.
So the company has to be New Jersey-based?
Yeah, so these are a little earlier. They don't have to have a formal office. They have to have a presence in New Jersey, meaning at least half of their employees, 2 of their founders have to be full-time and also based in New Jersey.
Often these are early enough stage, but those 2 founders might be 2 of the
3. It's usually just the founders are employees at this point. Next program is Angel Match. So here the EDA makes convertible notes up to $500K in New Jersey startups when they're raising an early preferred equity round. This uses SSBCI capital, so that was featured last month. Today we closed 4 companies and have 2 more in the process, and we're about to pass $2 million in funds extended to startups. some of the aspects that I wanted to highlight where I think we're doing really well. So over 60% of our applicant companies have at least one aspect of diversity amongst their founders. The leverage ratio for this program is 1-to-1, so one of our dollars to match $1 investment dollars. And we're actually at 1-to-1.5. And then the minimum employee requirement for companies is 50% or half of them here in New Jersey, but our applicant companies are averaging more than 70% based here in New Jersey. And then two company examples, AlphaRock, that's a fintech AI company. They have tools for predictive analytics on sentiment, and it's mainly used by investment managers on Wall Street. This is a NORC company, and they actually got the Audible grant and moved from Summit to NORC. And then Princeton Identity, probably can guess where that one's located. It's a woman-led security startup for identification. It uses facial recognition and actually more specifically your iris recognition. Angel tax credit, here we provide refundable tax credits on investments in startups here in Jersey. We approve it. That allows the investor to claim the credit after they file their taxes, and it's a refundable credit. So if they have no outstanding liability, they get the cash back for the credit amount. Here I just wanted to relate how we've done over the last 10 years. Over 4,000 applications to the program, 3,300 approved and still ongoing every day. We're currently wrapping up the 2022 program year and about halfway through 2023. Actually, that was based on Q1, so we'll know for next meeting the next progress there. But these apps, they represent over $1 billion worth of investment into more than 160 New Jersey companies. And we've awarded their investors with $120 million of credits. Demand still very strong. Checked yesterday, first half of the year, we got 246 applications to the program. And historically, second part of the year is busier than first. So,
do you find that this program fascinates me, because I never knew about it until I joined the board. Do you find that people who utilize the program, is it the same pool of people, or is it a diverse,
No, we're always getting new folks in, but what we see that is companies that do have legs and keep going, they don't just do their first seed round, then the next round of investments, investors come back and come back. So there is repetitive amongst companies, and usually it grows. So first round, you'll see just a few investors. 6 months, a year later, all of a sudden 20, 30 maybe come back. So it follows along. But we did notice it kind of followed the trend in the market. So 21 and 20 program years had a little bit of an increase over the last couple of years. But we didn't drop down to where we were before there. So I think that shows that we are making good market penetration.
Are there any requirements that they provide or get patents? I mean, there's in so much innovation, there is redundancy.
Yeah.
You find, they might start up with, I'm just using security identification. You talk about irises mm-hmm. and facial recognition. There's so many other companies that also provide that same services. So what would make them more unique? What would make them stand out that we would, make those investments?
So ATC doesn't have a technology or an IP requirement. They do have to be commercializing one of the eligible technologies, which makes this a little bit different. So they don't have to just be in an industry. They actually have to be commercializing a technology, so something product-based. And there's 12. Yeah, so there is more specific.
Okay.
NOL does have
that. Yes, NOL has that.
Sure. One observation, I think, to the chairman's point, ATC in particular is one we have to do. There's more we can do, but it is a program that we need to get the word out as broadly as we can, because it's quite broadly applicable. The one shortcoming, if I was remembering, and there's a proposed legislation that would change this. The amount of the tax credit is quite generous in some senses. I think it's not quite enough to get someone to move their company here to qualify for it, and that's what we'd really like to see, is that somebody decides, my investor, I want to take advantage of this credit, so the company should move from New York or Pennsylvania or the moon to New Jersey. And so if that credit amount, the percent, not the dollars, went up.
Yeah, I do also find there's a little misconception around the program. The first one is around where the investors are based. So actually, you don't have to be a New Jersey resident. About half of them are for out-of-state residents. They just have to file a tax return to claim it. And then it's refundable. So a lot of people just assume, oh, it can only offset my capital gains, or it's refundable. You don't have any tax liability, want the cash back, you can get it back.
Yeah.
Go on. And then the last program I just wanted to highlight was the annual NOL. So that wrapped up June 30th, and recommendations should be coming to this board in September. And then in this program, we have biotechs and techs. They're running at a loss, and through the program, they get to package those losses into a tax credit, which then they could sell to another profitable company that could utilize the tax credit, generating more working capital. There is an IP requirement for the companies in this one. 2024 is the 25th year of the program. Once completed, we've helped more than 600 companies and supported them with more than $2 billion in sales from their NOL. This is just the last couple years of the approval amounts, benefit amounts. Approvals have been pretty steady, but we haven't seen that the awards have been ticking up for the total. And then I also included a quote from a CEO of a semiconductor. Semis, very important, very prominent industry nowadays. This company used the program for multiple years, and their quote really speaks to the financial benefit of NOL, and recently this company sold to a very large multinational in their industry. And then the second part of what for us is how we engage and grow the ecosystem. So, you know, we do that through many activities, first getting out with press releases, articles, posts, newsletters, and more generally content. Then we have the interactive stuff. We're making presentations, attending events, hosting webinars, listening sessions, and our newest office hours. And last, of course, direct meetings. Who are we working with? So other EDA teams, the governor's office, other state resources, the startups themselves, the investment community, and then the larger business community that supports startups. We also work with various industry groups, plus traditional chambers of commerce and local EDCs, lesser extent, news outlets and publication. And then the final is, ties it all together, I feel, how we do it. So that's all through communication, collaboration, it's customized, high touch, and targeted. We focus on building relationships, adding value, not just selling something or an immediate transaction. Also thinking full life cycle of a startup, not just today. These things all take time, so we're supporting continuing the growth of the companies. We do this with regular intervals, and we've been developing ways to track and report it all. And then the next few slides I have is just all in action. So with the help of the comms team, we have our press releases around the NOL program. Industry partners helping us get the word out on behalf through their social media posts, one from Tech United, that's reposting Angel Match press release, ByMJ sharing our office hours link. And then news outlets, they're really hungry for content. So when we do put out stories, they typically will generate their own on top of that and put them out in the market. These are some presentations that the postings for them. So we're working with our partners, Morris County, the Indus Entrepreneurs. One's a presentation, our team will choose New Jersey. Another's a panel, has a member from our team as well as the venture team. These are some events. So actually, I checked in the first half of the year, we had over 80 event approvals for our team. So thanks to the event team for helping us out there. In our first picture, we have Monica and Priha with Michelle and Grace from the Ventures team. They're at a pitch competition in Newark. Then myself, Curtis from the Ventures team, Choose New Jersey, plus other FAST partners, FAST, which you'll hear of later. And that's at the Plug and Play conference out in California. And then the last one I just want to touch on is our new monthly office hours. We're about to have our sixth one on Friday. This goes back and forth from in-person to online. Our registration page is online, and it's linked to all of our product pages. Each one of these events, we do a short rundown of our programs, and then we feature one or two from other departments that we think are applicable to our audience. So for this month, we're featuring Founders and Funders and the new Life Science Fund out of the Ventures team. Past ones have had CSIT, Business Action Center out, and actually Jermaine from Diversity was out for one of them. We record all of them, and they get posted back up to the website. And our goal here is so that we can address interest in our department and program from the community at scale. So that about wraps it up. Kathleen or Rom have anything to add to it, or if you guys have any questions, happy to answer it. If not, thanks for the time.
Thus concludes, you might not remember that we are still technically in the CEO report portion of the program. Then we had a fair bit to get through. I want to give it to you. With that, I yield the floor back to you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Tim. We'll now enter the public comment section. I'm going to open the public comment portion of the meeting. First, I'm going to ask Daniel Esser to share NJEDA's public comment policy and process for this board meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As stated in NJEDA's public comment policy, members of the public who wish to speak during the public comment period will be acknowledged to speak first in person and then by phone during this portion of the meeting. Members attending the meeting by phone who are interested in providing public comment can press 1, then 0 to be registered to speak, which will place each person into a queue based on the order received. I'll go over NJEDA's public comment policy, which is also available on our website. Each speaker will be prompted to speak one at a time. Each speaker should announce his or her name, organization, affiliation, and the topic on which remarks will be given. Each speaker will have a maximum of 3 minutes to speak. It should limit comments to matters pertaining to the authority. Staff will prompt the speaker once their time has expired. And a person may only register to speak once during the same public comment period to ensure enough time is available for all those who wish to speak. And speakers may provide related documents, printed comments, or materials attached to an email. We look forward to receiving your public comment at this time.
Thank you, Danielle. I would now like to acknowledge any members of the public who wish to provide comment at this time in the room.
Good morning. Good morning, everybody.
Okay, hey, before you get started, I drove past your place yesterday. It looks great.
Thank you. It's part of my back. Hi, again, my name is Michael Reed. I represent Reservoir Partners. We do a lot of work in Atlantic County in reference to compliance and service for cannabis businesses trying to stand up in Atlantic County. First, I wanted to say thank you for everybody that has reached out to me separately since the last meeting, specifically Ms. Ty Cooper and her staff, for kind of, you know, assisting me. But there are still a couple matters that I wanted to bring before the EDA just as a public comment, just for the benefit of everything that we're trying to do. So, again, I represent a company called Reservoir Partners, and we assist other cannabis-related businesses with all things cannabis-related. You know, gratis, honestly, just because, you know, we have experience. What I'm noticing is that when I first appeared before the board, I had questions about the list of initial awardees for your seed equity program. I thank the EDA for giving me the list of the initial awardees. I just wanted to put on the record my input, public input, for what happens next. And honestly, from my standpoint, I was just wondering if what the EDA's plans were for further assistance to the cannabis market, specifically social equity and micro businesses, specifically Atlantic County. I just got the list of awardees maybe 5-6 days ago, so I haven't had a chance to scrub it thoroughly. But after comparing EDA disbursement data with against the CRC award data, Atlantic County, which is the county I'm most familiar with, has about 35 annual micro retail businesses, and unfortunately, from a percentage standpoint, that would be about 22%, and they only kind of received maybe, I guess, mathematically speaking, about 4% of the funds. I want to thank Atlantic City specifically just for being such an open door sort of place for people to land, but obviously with the influx of businesses, the condensed market being 48 blocks, Atlantic County is large. But long story short, I'm wondering, as the board sits and contemplates if they're going to add more funds, obviously my public comment would be, could that analysis gear towards more stores that are already stood up? And then when they do decide on awardees, I know in the beginning it was a time-based from the beginning of the application, but I'm wondering if support could be divvied up by saturation, so to speak. But again, my first thing was thank you for everything that you've done, but I know it was imperative for me to get here. I apologize for being late. I know you guys are off next month, so I just wanted to make sure I spoke that piece before. So enjoy your summer. Thank you.
Quick, Chris, if that's okay with you, Chairman?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Then any way you want. Okay.
No, I'm here.
First of all, thanks for being for coming back.
I don't wear a suit. No hoodie today.
I took mine off, so.
I was nervous about the tie, but I think we're good.
And
well, I'm just trying to match energy, I think. This is kind of thank you. Thank you.
Good news is that in the budget the governor just signed, there's an additional $5 million of funding to support cannabis businesses that was allocated to the EDA. So that's good.
Awesome.
We have not decided yet how exactly we want to think about that. It'll very likely be some either continuation of the joint venture program or seed equity.
Yes.
We already have this stood up and there's a certain efficiency there. As it relates to geographic targeting, I hear you. And Atlantic City certainly has a huge concentration of you know, cannabis businesses, and that makes a ton of sense. The trade-off in time-based applications versus like a scored application where we say like, you know, we give extra points for places where there's, you know, we didn't get as much coverage last time.
Sure.
It takes much more time to evaluate those applications. So it's a trade-off. It's not better or worse, it's just a trade-off.
Sure.
But the comments that are very helpful, happy to have a continued conversation. I know Ty's listening out in speakerphone land. And so I'm happy to continue the conversation. And you know, we'll probably do some structured listening about what to do with the next $5 million because we want to make sure we get it right, because ask 100 people in this industry, get 100 opinions about what we ought to do, and we'll do our best to sort through that. But appreciate your comments.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Anyone else in the room? Okay, operator, any comments online on the phone?
Ladies and gentlemen, for the members of the public on the phone, if you wish to ask a question, please press 1, then 0 on your telephone keypad. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the number. Once again, if you have a question, you may press 1, then 0 at this time. And one moment for our first question. And at this time, there are no questions in queue.
Okay, thank you very much, operator. We're going to move forward now to the real estate discussion. And Charles, could I ask you for a brief summary of the Real Estate Committee report?
Oh, yes. Thank you, Chairman. The Real Estate Committee met on June 28th with the staff of the EDA to consider three items to proceed to the board for a vote this month for this today. The first one was the approval of the creation of a new real estate gap financing grant program. There was a vibrant discussion between the board members and the staff over, I think, two committee meetings on this, and we look forward to the staff presenting this to the board as it's an exciting program. And then there are two recommendations with regard to the Atlantic City Revitalization Grant Awards for approval by the board. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Charles. Okay, the next item, Dan, the first item is under real estate is the creation of a real estate gap financing grant program. And Liza, did I get that correct?
Will
be presenting.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairman and members of the board. I'm here to present to the board a recommendation to approve the real estate gap financing program while also canceling the existing construction inflation fund program. As EDA continues to work on and provide funding for various real estate development projects and products, we continually assess our program. The Construction Inflation Fund program was approved by the board in December of 2022, and by the application deadline at the end of 2023, we had received 17 applications. The Construction Inflation Fund program had numerous eligibility criteria and program requirements, which ended up being more complex and challenging than anticipated for applicants to meet. This resulted in many incomplete applications and/or insufficient application documentation, even following preliminary outreach and requests for additional information or clarifications, such that applications were not able to satisfactorily and sufficiently meet the program requirements. No applications have been approved, or denied, and so staff recommends that the board cancel the Construction Inflation Fund program and refund the 15 paid application fees. Instead, and recognizing the lingering COVID-19 economic impact, especially in many of New Jersey's distressed municipalities, the Real Estate Gap Financing Fund program will still provide the gap financing to real estate projects in support and to continue the economic recovery post-COVID, but minor changes have been made from the original Construction Inflation Fund so that the new program is more likely to succeed. Changes include a broadening of eligible applicants from just small businesses to both for-profit and nonprofit developers, the focus of funding of the projects, which will be located in distressed municipalities, will build off and supplement ongoing authority efforts with other programs for continued economic recovery and revitalization in those impacted communities. And additionally, application requirements have been simplified and made more consistent with other current EDA programs. So as an overview, as shown on the slide, the Real Estate Gap Financing Program will provide $10 million in federal, state, local fiscal recovery funding. It will be a grant program, competitive application, with a maximum award of $5 million and a minimum of $500,000. The grant may not exceed 50% of total project costs, as outlined in the board memo. The applicants, as I mentioned, would be nonprofits or for-profit development entities. The project locations, projects must be located within municipalities defined as both meeting top 20% of municipal revitalization index communities and the top 20% of commuter adjusted population communities, excluding those municipalities which the board, ETA, and the state have most recently supported through other programs, including ART Phase 1, Atlantic City Revitalization Grant Program, and the Urban Investment Fund. So that will result in 25 eligible municipality locations as outlined in the board memo. Eligible projects would be new construction or substantial rehabilitation and could include a variety of uses, including commercial, mixed use, nonprofit or community use, cultural, arts, and or manufacturing projects. As mentioned, this would be a competitive court application. All approvals for funding or recommendations for funding awards or denials would come back to the board. And as mentioned, this does utilize federal funding, so the key will be to continue to move this forward and meet that federal funding expenditure deadline of December 31st, 2026. So the board is asked to approve the cancellation of the Construction Inflation Fund and returning of the fees to repay by 16 of the 17 applicants, the creation of the new program as we've outlined, and then also a delegated authority to amend or enter into the MOU with EPA regarding these funds.
Would you expect the 15 to reapply?
No.
Not all of them.
I would say most of them, we found out, a lot of them actually started construction, are already in process. Some of them would not be within the eligible municipalities. That's a small number, but others already have lined up their funding and that. So, but yes, some of them we were finding were already complete. We're trying to work through the internal reviews, and that was some of the complexity of the program.
Would you point those companies to other ETA programs?
So we've alerted them that this was on hold after the Real Estate Committee reviewed the program and that this action may be occurring, and then we will officially let them know. But, yes, we have told them and alerted them to the other ETA programs that might be available, including this new one for some.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other programs also.
Thank you. Does the money need to be expended by the end of 2026?
Yes. So we are already behind the scenes working with our great EPA teams on developing an application and ready to go out as soon as we can.
And harkening back to some of my comments during the budget comments, federal, if there's federal money that we don't know what we're doing with it yet, by the beginning of the fourth quarter of this year, we're going to be really up against it. It has to be programmed, meaning it has to be described as it's going to be a real estate program, Windport project, child care facilities program, whatever it's going to be. It's got to be described by the end of this year, and that's a forever description. And then it's got to be spent within those 24 months, every penny. Because if it does not come back to the House, it goes back to Washington.
Is there anything we should learn from the rulemaking initially? Did we make it too complicated, or is there any learning there?
Short answer, yes, but Liza, why don't you fill in the details?
Yeah, so this was one of the first programs coming out of the gate at EGA for real estate construction, and there were a lot of requirements. Our real estate committee remembers that for addressing the initial COVID impact and showing an initial budget, a post-COVID budget, what the increases were, and that complexity proved very challenging. Also, too, some projects wanted to come in, had already started construction, did not include prevailing wage, and so it just created a number of challenges. Right now, we addressed those, worked with our real estate committee to simplify it, but also keep it consistent with the more recent EGA program.
Great. Any further questions, discussions, comments? So the motion we're being asked to consider is to terminate the old program and reinstitute the new program.
Mm-hmm.
One motion, yes. Can I hear a motion?
I'll do it.
Thank you, Ginny. Second?
Second.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
The opposed, refusals, or abstentions? Okay, none being heard, the motion passed. I'm going to now give a summary of both the Policy and Audit Committee meetings that occurred prior to this meeting. The NJEDA Policy Committee met on June 28th, and the Audit Committee met on July 1st. Each committee considered many items this month. For policy, under the venture category, staff presented a recommendation to invest into a partnership with Plug and Play to establish and operate NJ Fast, a fintech investment fund and accelerator in Hoboken, New Jersey. Staff also presented a recommendation to approve the implementation of a 2024 NJ Founders and Funders All-Star event and pilot grant program, which I mentioned in my remarks. This was followed by a recommendation for an NJ Innovation Evergreen Fund qualified investment approval, and staff presented a recommendation for a venture fund investment for Newark Venture Partners 3. I will be recusing from that discussion as my family foundation has an investment in a prior Newark Venture Partners fund. Under community development, staff presented a recommendation for an activation, revitalization, and transformation, or ART, real estate grant in Atlantic City, as I mentioned in my remarks, as well as a recommendation for amendments to the Main Street recovery fee rules. Committee also was presented with other requests, including a request for NJEDA to enter into an MOU with Rutgers in support of the ESOP program, which I mentioned, and an amendment to the NJ Green Workforce Training Grant Challenge Program. Regarding the Audit Committee, the committee received the usual updates, including financial updates and reports, updates regarding audits, and a portfolio review. So with that, we'll move to the various items for approval. First, under economic transformation is the Strategic Innovation Center Investment in NJ Fast. Tim?
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be with you today to present staff's recommendation for a commitment of up to $17.1 million towards the Strategic Innovation Center, NJ Fast, for the New Jersey FinTech Accelerator at Stevens Institute of Technology. NJ Fast will create a facility that directly supports research and development, innovation, and entrepreneurship. Will foster the development of new, innovative fintech and insurtech startup companies in the state. The commitment includes a prospective fund investment of up to $12.5 million, up to $4.25 million in fund accelerator management and operating expenses, and up to $323,000 for rent expense. As a condition of the program, dollars committed by EDA will be met with private sector match. The recommendation for NJ Fast follows from the July 2021 board approved policy to establish strategic innovation centers. Staff has determined the proposal, as presented, demonstrates eligibility, feasibility, as well as financial and economic development impact, as outlined in Appendix D of the memo. The fund documents are attached in Appendix A to provide specific clarity on the terms highlighted in the memo. The program, managed by Plug and Play, will accelerate two cohorts or batches of startups per year, comprised of 10 or more independent companies per cohort over 4 years. minimum of 20% of each cohort will be sourced from the state of New Jersey. In addition, Plug and Play will maintain a goal that each cohort will include representation of at least 15% diverse founders per cohort. Plug and Play is a California-based firm with accelerator operations in more than 60 cities globally and is targeting to raise $25 million fund as an element of NJFAST, inclusive of EDA's commitment that will provide investments to graduates of the NJFAST accelerator and fintech and insurtech companies either located in New Jersey or moving significant operations to New Jersey. Plug and Play, which will also have a meaningful investment in the fund, has experience working with more than 400 corporate partners for the benefit of more than 3,000 startups in 2023 alone. NJFAST will be located in Hoboken, adjacent to our academic partner, Stevens Institute of Technology. The proximity will provide accelerator companies the benefit of working with Stevens faculty, staff, and a dedicated team of 10 students annually towards commercialization of innovative businesses in the tech space. In addition to the primary location in Hoboken, NJFAST will offer portfolio companies a chance to operate out of a satellite location in Newark, made possible by founding corporate partner, Prudential Financial. Companies will have the chance to work shoulder to shoulder with professionals to understand challenges and pathways to commercializing solutions. Plug and Play will continue to seek additional limited partners and corporate partners to support the program that Plug and Play will run exclusively in New Jersey, with contracting with them. NJFAST will be the third approved strategic innovation center, if approved today, following the Helix Life Science Innovation Center based in New Brunswick and HACS Cleantech Hard Tech Accelerator based in Newark. To close, I'll reiterate the request for approval of a commitment of up to $17.1 million to fund NJFAST, powered by Plug and Play, with the request fully documented in your board package, and conclude my remarks. Questions, if any, are welcome.
And Chairman, question to the board, just to add a coda to Tim's excellent presentation. And we discussed this policy committee earlier in the year. This really brings together, and this is one of the most exciting things we've done certainly in a while, maybe in my time at the EDA, this really brings together a ton of Governor Murphy's strategic themes, some of which are sort of the vanilla. We care a lot about the startup ecosystem. We care a lot about innovation. We care about that for a long time. But really dialing up the strategic nature of those commitments and our collaborations with higher ed. We've said from the beginning, at least the Murphy administration, that tying higher ed and research into the real economy is one of the secret sauces of most successful innovation ecosystems. Things like NJFAST, HACS, and Helix, Tri-Tech City, the Brazilian Aviation Play, and County as well, are all part and parcel of that strategy. The other thing I mentioned here, and I full credit to Kathleen for all of this, following the governor's strategy, but implementing it in an excelsior way under her leadership. Having Plug and Play come to Jersey and play in this kind of way, Plug and Play is one of the category killers of accelerators and venture studios in the world. If you go to their headquarters in Silicon Valley, you see logos of every company you've ever heard of that has gone public in the last 20 years. They've had their fingerprints in some way. Started out by doing a equity for rent play to a company that became PayPal or eBay. PayPal. So that was a good investment of a couple hundred grand. And so they've turned that model into a really, really powerful platform. So between Plug and Play, if you closed your eyes a few years ago and said you'd love to have folks who are real big players in this world active in New Jersey, and you made a list in your mind, there'd be four or five names on the list, but two of them would be Plug and Play and HACS, the rest of us. So as we think about the innovative capacity of the state, some of the things that Governor Murphy has done to really supersize that, put that on steroids in a good way. This is one of the excelsior moments on that journey.
And just, Kim, in terms of economics, the $12.5 million investment in the fund, which is a $25 million total fund, so
half. Correct, yes.
And Plug and Play will be investing in that fund along with
that. That's correct, yes. The significant investment on their part, 10%.
And then third party money.
Yep.
Oh, and the other thing that you mentioned, partnering with corporates in a big way as well. So Prudential putting their stamp on this and some money into it. Again, when we talked about in the early days of the Murphy years, how to get big corporates, the startups, the innovation ecosystem, higher ed all together.
Yep,
this brings all of that home.
Great. Let me just add one more thing. Plug and Play will be their first beachhead on the East Coast or Northeast.
Be the first, I'm sorry?
It'll be the first operation in the Northeast for Plug and Play. And we've also made sure that they cannot replicate this operation in New York and in Massachusetts.
Once we negotiate it right, put Kathleen and Rob on the chair.
Hey, any questions in the room? Just
discussion? Anyone on the phone with questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, can I hear a motion to approve?
I'll move it.
Thank you. Second?
I'll second, Chair.
Thank you, Fred. No further comments. Could I hear all those in favor signify by saying aye?
Aye.
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 Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion is approved. Congratulations. Next, Grace, on the NJ Founders and Funders All-Star Program Award.
Thank you, guys. Pleased to be here today with everybody. Building off of your earlier remarks, thank you so much for introing us to this program a little bit. I'm here today to recommend the approval of the creation and funding of the 2024 New Jersey Founders and Funders All-Stars event. This event aligns with the authority's strategy to bolster New Jersey's entrepreneurial ecosystem. So as the chairman touched on in his earlier remarks, this program is an ecosystem-building event, which is regularly organized by the authority to facilitate curated one-on-one meetings between venture capital investors and eligible high-growth New Jersey-based businesses. Building upon the success of previous events, this proposed fall 2024 All-Stars event represents the second programmatic All-Stars event, which features more mature startups that have previously participated in previous New Jersey Founders and Funders events, with a financial award being available to program participants. This event proposes to provide an opportunity for an eligible participating startup to apply for $100,000 in non-dilutive grant funding. Event attendance will be offered to the first 30 applicants who successfully complete an online application form and pass a case screening eligibility review. To participate, eligible startups must be registered here in New Jersey, have attended a previous New Jersey Founders and Funders event, and meet specific business and operational criteria, such as maintaining a physical presence and employment threshold in the space, in the state, as well as demonstrating a significant third-party capital raise of at least $1 million. During the event, the program will include one-on-one pitch sessions between select startups and investors. Investors will score each meeting to determine the top three companies, who will then pitch to a full audience and who will do popular vote to determine the best pitch. The event will also feature a resource fair for engagement with key stakeholders in the innovation ecosystem. Following the event, the authority will open up an application to apply for $100,000 of grant funding. Authority staff will conduct a complete review of all program eligibility criteria described in the memorandum, which will include the requirement that the award recipient be the highest scoring eligible event participant to successfully complete an application. The grant recipient will enter into a program grant agreement with the authority, which will be subject to a three-year compliance period. Annual reports will ensure the continued eligibility, including a sustained presence in New Jersey, with provisions for clawback if a company falls out of compliance. Delegation of authority is also requested for the chief executive officer to oversee the competition, winner selection, and funding process as it adheres to the criteria detailed in your memo. And I'll just conclude my remarks by reiterating our recommendation to approve the creation and funding of this 2024 New Jersey Founders and Funders All-Star event to help catalyze further investment and growth into the most promising New Jersey-based startups. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Have we done this before?
We did it once in 2017.
Is the final event in a physical location?
It will be.
You broadcast it?
Venue TBA, typically for the event, we limit it to just entrepreneurs and investors, but this one will allow some additional startup ecosystem participants to come and view and vote for
that. Where will it be? Do you know yet?
We don't know yet. We contemplated it building something outside of the Bioscience Center, but now we're hoping to maybe secure a venue, and the venues are always in mind with innovation for the space.
Could you broadcast?
Yeah, and we could broadcast, we could record, and it's just following Grace's comments, so the twice-a-year events, we're really particular about only investors, only entrepreneurs. We have many service providers, community builders that want to be part of those events, so this is a great opportunity to engage and bring more folks in and showcase the great companies in the state. As we mentioned in committee, we'll certainly make sure the board members get an invite to the event as well.
I think you're hearing the chairman implicitly ask if maybe be the Mark Cuban role in the contest. I mean, what's the location in advance?
I was just thinking Shark Tank in general.
Yeah, okay.
And all audience members, you heard Grace say, the VCs select the top three companies in the morning, and then in the afternoon, all audience members vote on a poll on their phones to select the top company out of the selected three in the VC community.
Very cool.
Is there any stipulations on how the $100,000 has to be spent for the company?
We're requesting that it be used only for working capital, just to avoid any labor law compliance getting into this down on the front.
Any other comments, questions? Anyone on the phone? Hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Okay, I'll follow you, Fred.
Okay. Yeah, really. Thank you both. No further discussion. Can I hear all those in favor signify by saying aye? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, refusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, the motion passes. Good luck.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Next is the New Jersey Innovation Evergreen Fund, a qualified investment approval. Alexander. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm pleased to be with you all to present our recommendation for the EDA's third qualified investment under the New Jersey Innovation Evergreen Fund program. As a reminder for the members, the Evergreen Fund program is the authority's co-investment program, where we invest alongside institutional venture capital firms into eligible, innovative, high-growth New Jersey-based companies, typically startups. The qualified investment applicant recommended for approval today is an application by the venture capital firm Bullpen Management LLC, doing business as Bullpen Capital, for a $3 million investment into the Series Seed 3 preferred stock financing round of Many Moons Co., doing business as The Many Company, an innovative high-growth New Jersey-based business. Bullpen Capital was approved as a program-qualified venture firm under delegated authority on July 2nd, pending execution of program-closing legal agreements. Upon approval, staff will reserve up to an additional $562,500 for related management fee expenses and up to an additional $240,000 for direct administrative expenses, such as special purpose vehicle startup and wind down costs and the cost of an annual audit of the SPV. To align in proportion with the amount reserved for subsequent follow-on investments into the Many Company by Bullpen Capital, upon approval, the program will also reserve an additional $3 million for follow-on equity investments into the Many Company. The recommendation offered here today has met all program eligibility requirements as determined by the Venture Programs Department in conjunction with the Product Operations Department. Eligibility requirements and confidential transaction details are included in the recommendation memorandums in your packets. As a reminder, the program's evaluation process focuses on an evaluation of the venture firm, and the review of the potential qualified business is limited to an eligibility review. So we're largely relying on the investment expertise of our co-investors and aligning incentives. Bullpen Capital is a San Francisco-based early-stage venture capital firm managing over $700 million in assets under management across six flagship funds. The firm's senior management team has a rich history of founding and investing in some of the industry's most prominent technology companies, and prior funds include nine unicorn investments now valued at over $1 billion. The firm targets early-stage investments operating in pre-consensus industries, geographies, or founders that are often overlooked by the mainstream venture capital community. The approach has led to a high-performing and diverse roster of portfolio companies. More than 50% of portfolio company founders across the firm's three most recent flagship funds come from underrepresented backgrounds, including the Many Company, which is woman-led. The firm typically leads post-seed rounds that fall between the cracks of Series Seed and Series A financing rounds. The Many Company is a Ridgewood, New Jersey-based technology platform that helps direct to consumers sustainable apparel brands, accelerate growth, and participate in a circular economy. The company was founded in 2020 and has pioneered new pathways to support small to mid-sized apparel brands on their path to being more sustainable and profitable, with a mix of service offerings, including digital distribution, developing circular shops through hosted web properties, and third-party logistics services. The company generated over $1 million in revenues in 2023 and has a robust waitlist of brand partners. The Many Company generates revenue through a percent of sales on return overstock and refurbished resale apparel through circular shops managed by the Many Company and other distribution channels. Brand partners also engage with the Many Company in third-party logistics contracts to handle end-to-end warehousing, order fulfillment, logistics, and more. The product offerings provide brand partners with more sustainable paths for consumption while supporting their financial health. The Many Company is B Corp certified, and its service offerings resonate with its sustainable apparel brand customers that share their environmentally friendly ethos. The qualified investment will follow a $3.25 million investment made by Bullpen Capital to occur on the same transaction terms. I will conclude my prepared remarks reiterating staff's recommendation for approval for the application of qualified investment into the Many Company. Thank you for your consideration. I welcome any questions.
Just a couple quick raises. This is our third of these, so we're starting to get some momentum. We had our third. That one I know, Kevin. You can't get up earlier than that. I got that three I know. This is our third of these. We're starting to see some momentum. We had our first one a year and a half ago. That's 4 years time as chair. And then we've had our second and third, we'll have our fourth sometime soon, maybe September, and so we're starting to see some momentum in this, which is both a good ratification of the platform, but also a good sign that the venture market's starting to heal a little bit, and I think that really overall it's starting to be good for the economy. Generally speaking, the other thing I mentioned, and Alexander mentioned it, is of our third, this is our first woman-owned firm, or woman-led firm, excuse me, which is great, and I think part and parcel of our commitment to diversity in our venture activities and our Golden Seas work, First Lady Leads, and our Black Seed Fund, and lots of things we're doing around trying to bolster the entrepreneurial sector, not just for the usual suspects, but for folks who are left out of that.
And I know Alexander mentioned it, and we talked about this in committee, but just to remind everybody, we're not opining on the investment itself. We're relying on Bullpen, in this case, to do the work on the investment. We're co-investing with them.
Correct.
If we're using their guidance, we know.
And they're putting their money in dollar for dollar with us.
And they have a great track record.
Yes. There are some, you know, there. If someone brought us a business that was doing something completely disharmonious with state policy, we would certainly find ways to not.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, I would just add that this is part of the thesis of the Evergreen platform in general, that we're bringing out-of-state investors into New Jersey, building stronger relationships with them so that they'll do more investing here, as well as our homegrown fund, which you'll hear next from Alison.
Great. Any further questions? Anyone on the phone, questions or comments? Hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
I'll move it.
Thank you. Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, the motion passes. Congratulations.
Okay. He's not done yet.
As far as I'm concerned, he is. I'm recusing from the next vote to avoid a potential conflict of interest because my family foundation has an investment with Newark Venture Partners, and to that end, I've asked Virginia Bauer to lead the board through the next vote.
My pleasure, Mr. Chairman. So, Alexander, I guess you will talk to us about Newark Venture Partners 3 and the approval is requested under the Authority Venture Fund Investment. And I'll let you complete the report. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. This month, staff is recommending a venture fund commitment to Newark Venture Partners Fund 3 LP and an affiliate fund for an amount of up to the lesser of $6 million. Or 6% of committed capital in NVP 3 should the fund size be less than $100 million. Of the EDA's aggregate commitment, Newark Venture Partner has committed to manage up to $1 million through an affiliate fund form for the purpose of exclusively making investments into Newark-based startups. The remainder of the authority's proposed committed capital will be allocated to Newark Venture Partners 3 LP. Newark Venture Partners has a strong track record of investing in New Jersey and has committed to invest an additional $2 for every $1 the authority commits to NVP 3 into New Jersey-based companies. Investments made from the Newark-focused affiliate fund will also require a 2-to-1 private sector match, either from additional LPs participating in the fund or, more likely, through investment syndicate partners identified by Newark Venture Partners. So of the up to $6 million aggregate commitment, we would expect at least $18 million to be deployed into New Jersey-based startups. The EDA has been making investments into venture funds since 1995 and has committed an aggregate $77 million across 22 funds. To date, these investments have created nearly 6,800 jobs and have achieved a net return of over $44 million back to the authority. Newark Venture Partners is an early-stage venture capital firm based in Newark, New Jersey, that primarily invests in companies operating in the business-to-business or B2B software space. The firm is targeting a fund size of $100 million for its third fund, of which it has closed on $58.3 million to date. NVP3's early-stage venture investing approach is differentiated from competitors by the firm's ability to leverage its corporate limited partner networks, which help the firm validate investment opportunities and adds value to portfolio companies post-investment. NVP's senior leadership team has remained consistent since Fund 2 and is led by Dan Borok, Tom Wisniewski, and Vaughn Crow, who are all established early-stage investors in the ecosystem. The EDA is an investor in the firm's first two funds, committing up to 3% of Fund 1 and up to 5% of Fund 2. In aggregate, the authority committed a total of $5.3 million to the first two funds, of which $4 million has been deployed, leaving an unfunded commitment of roughly $1.4 million. The firm is an established partner in the New Jersey innovation ecosystem and has made commitments to support the ecosystem beyond simply fund capital, including hosting startup events and, including hosting startups and community organizations out of its offices in downtown Newark, committing carried interest to local community organizations, participating in EDA programming, and organizing large ecosystem events in New Jersey. To reiterate, staff is recommending a venture fund commitment to Newark Venture Partners Fund 3 LP and an affiliate fund for an aggregate amount up to the lesser of $6 million or 6% of committed capital in NVP 3. I'd be happy to take any questions at this time.
You said, I think, correctly, that it's the same team that has been handled Venture Capital
1
and 2 will now be taking
break.
That's correct.
In between 1 and 2, they had Vaughn join. So 2 and 3 are the same.
Yeah, 2 and 3.
Tom and Dan have been there all three. Vaughn joined when there was 2.
Yeah, and he was actually an advisor in their first fund. So he's been around the firm since its inception.
Any other questions? Okay, if none, may I have a motion? All in favor, please. Say aye.
Madam Chair, I'll make the motion first.
Pardon me? Oh, motion. The one thing I had to do, I screwed up. I have a motion to move it, please.
I'll make the motion, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Second, please.
Second, please.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Recusals or abstentions?
Noted in the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay, motion moves. Thank you.
Thank you, Jenny.
It's a little sloppy.
Now on
I'll give you an A.
Community development, Matt, on the art real estate grants.
Good morning. The ART program was designed to assist commercial quarters in Newark and Atlantic City to recover from the long-term impacts of COVID related to commuter decreased traffic. Newark and Atlantic City ART applicants were awarded at the February 7th, 2024 board meeting on March 14th, 2024. One of the Atlantic City awardees withdrew from the program due to a loss of site control. Due to the withdrawal of the Atlantic City awardee, staff reallocated funds to previously declined applicants based on scored ranking. The next highest ranking applicant is Jamal's Tate LLC. Jamal's Tate LLC is being recommended for an award of $1,182,241 for the redevelopment of 20 South Tennessee Avenue, also known as Tate House, and 14 South Tennessee Avenue. The project will rehab the existing buildings and connect them with a shared lobby and courtyard. The end result will be 13 apartments with approximately 2,600 square feet of ground floor retail. So, and I think the next slide is, yes, yeah, so that's just a rendering of it. So it's just ground floor retail and 13 apartments.
Mm-hmm. Any questions?
How much will you invest in a part of the city of these?
Christina was kind enough to tour me around yesterday. Some of these sites, this will look a lot better than what it looks like now.
Great. Any other questions? Anyone on the phone, questions or comments? Hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
I'll make a motion, Chair.
Thank you. Second?
I'll second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, refusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, the grant is approved. Next, Christina with several presentations.
So the next two items are going to be approvals, conditional approvals for the Atlantic City Revitalization Grant Program. So just a quick recap of that program. It's a pilot grant that will cover 50% of eligible capital costs for these projects in Atlantic City specifically. This is the second round that we're approving. So far, we still have a balance of $15.1 million. Again, these projects need to address a COVID and a local impact consideration. So we classified those into those categories of small business support efforts, clean and safe, food insecurity efforts, downtown and vitality, and job and office space and creation. So our first item is 114 South New York Avenue LLC, which is the development entity. So this will support the project called The Loop. It's located on 114 South New York Avenue. Again, this is in that Orange Loop neighborhood that we did the first two approvals on, so you're going to notice like a lot of concentration of these projects in the neighborhood as well, too. And this project is essentially taking a vacant, underutilized building right now that's two stories. It has really solid structure, beams into it, so they're going to add a couple of floors, but also build out to the side of it to create a restaurant, which will be potentially 198 seats, so a fairly large space. But also a beer garden. It's tied to outdoor gaming areas because they're going to also incorporate the improvement of this large parking lot so they can host concerts tied to their amphitheater. So the costs associated to that stage are not a part of this project, but the improvement to that site is. So the project costs slightly over $15.5 million, and our grant will support 50% of those costs. This project will address the fact that it's downtown vitality. When you look at it now, it's a very, empty building, a lot of parking space that really needs improvement as well, too. And it will help tie in the neighborhood. But also the fact that they're incorporating these small businesses and the fact that they're going to attract a restaurant, hire 60 people as well, too, for year-round jobs. This supports the small business efforts as well, too. So this is a conditional approval that will allow them to get the financing to secure the rest of the funding for this. That's the first item.
So they have to go fund the financing?
Yes, yes. So this is what it looks like today. You drive by it. Next slide. That's what it will look like in the future.
I think it's from a strategic perspective, Christina, of course, has done a great job implementing this. The governor allocated funding to this initiative, not to try and, for lack of a better metaphor, throw one long pass for Atlantic City. Let's not come up with some out-of-this-world idea and hope it works. This is about doing kind of neighborhood-scale, relatively small projects that had a big and sort of a disproportionate impact, and show that we can get some stuff done in AC, that it's new development, new construction, that is infill, that is supporting small business, and that this is a great example of that. The art project prior to this one, being a bit more tactical and surgical than, build a spaceship there.
And this development entity is actually owned by several parties. It's all tied to OZ Opportunity Zone funding, too. Pat Pisano is behind this, who was behind also redeveloping Asbury Park. So this attracted him, the Opportunity Zone funding did, and he's allowed partners to come in with this. So it's attracting that private capital as well, too, to support this.
Great.
And Christine, is CRITA involved? Do they help?
So they do the land use approval from the local level, but as far as the funding and financing, they don't have the support right now to do that. So this appropriation allowed us to do this.
I don't understand why they don't know.
So they're, a long story short, they're supported through investment alternative taxes, which was redirected to the city to pay down their debt and their bonds. So they get that funding potentially back in 2022. Yeah.
We also have some funding sources that sunsetted through legislation, so they're just in a different financial state
yeah.
than the EPA.
Okay. Yeah, so they really...
I think of them.
Yeah, not anymore. Yeah, it's just not there. Yeah, I was there for 8 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you get it.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
The fact that it's a job creator is great. The
yeah.
fact that they got to buy in with 50% of the finances is great. It's
mm-hmm.
just a, you know, fabulous project.
Great. Any other comments, questions? Anyone on the phone? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Motion approved.
Thank you. Second?
Okay. I'll second. Thank you.
Not tonight. Don't be good. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, refusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, the grant is approved.
Wait for the votes to get counted. Start with the exceptions.
Yeah, all right. Okay. So the next entity is LPMG Management Company. So they are going to essentially, right now, the first floor of the Armory building, they're going to redo, it's going to be called the Arsenal Market at the Armory, essentially. So this is a historic building. It's a, it was actually a federal building at one point, and then it was deactivated back in the 20s. But it's the Morris Guard Armory building as well. So, again, our project is just incorporating the first floor space. Right now, it's empty, needs this rehab. But what John Longacre did, who's tied to a lot of Philadelphia redevelopment, he essentially came in and rehabbed that space to accommodate 32 residential units. So our project does not incorporate that. It's just the first floor space. And what he's trying to do is really incorporate a Reading Terminal Market concept and create 22 individual market, like individual spaces. So if anyone who's been to Reading Terminal Market, you kind of understand the concepts, just on a smaller scale. It's only 7,000 square feet. But this will really allow like a community space, but also as someone who oversees our small business efforts, it's really important because having a lease or owning space is very expensive for a small business owner. So this allows them to really create that incubator retailer space and help grow from the entrepreneurship on the local level. This will be located on 10 South New York Avenue, again, in that Orange Loop neighborhood. Project costs are over $3.5 million, so our grants would be the $1.7. This is addressing downtown vitality efforts and also small business support as well, too. Again, this is conditional approval, so they would pursue their financing as well. They are contributing through their own money, but also getting a small loan as well.
Is the upstairs already done?
Yeah. So they if you look on Zillow right now, they are renting, but it's like not officially finalized. So they're trying to start already getting some interest in their, you know.
Okay.
That's it. So today, if you were to drive by it. Next picture. It's just, again, this is what the space looks like now. So imagine if you're standing in the center, you look to your left and you look to your right. This is the whole space, essentially. I don't have a pretty picture for future ones, but Hector, if you can, it's just that to lay out the space. But again, every vendor will get their own fit out, essentially.
Great. Any comments, questions? Anyone on the phone? Okay, hearing none, can I hear a motion to approve?
Motion of Fred Dumont.
Thank you.
I'll second.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, refusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the grant is approved. Next.
Okay, so this next item is the request to approve the amendment to the Main Street Recovery Finance Program fee rule. So this rule amendment will codify the approval fee of $100 for both the Small Business Lease Grant and the Small Business Improvement Grant. The approval fee allows small businesses that are already known that they're going to be approved to just pay this. Because we currently collect approval fees for both products right now, this amendment just memorializes the fact of the approval fee, but we're not altering the grant programs in any way.
Any further discussions, questions?
Well, no, we put through that public comment. We got zero public comment.
No.
Okay.
The public is satisfied. We're just noticed.
Could I hear a motion to approve?
I'll move it.
Second?
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, refusals, or abstentions? During hearing none, the amendment is approved. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, Brianna, on the memorandum of understanding between the NJEDA and Rutgers for the ESOP Education and Outreach.
Good
Good morning, members. Today I'm going to be presenting a request to enter into an MOU with the Rutgers University School of Management and Labor Relations and the authorization of $1.8 million out of the $6 million overall Wealth Disparities Initiative appropriation in the Fiscal Year 2024 Appropriations Act to fund the work under this MOU. The services provided under the agreement from the school will work to educate and inform the public on the benefits of employee ownership structures, establish relationships with employee ownership associations and research institutions, and provide NJEDA specialized assistance on a forthcoming employee stock ownership technical assistance program. Before I delve deeper into the needs and intricacies of this education outreach component, I would like to take a second to recognize Janae Johnson, Director of Office of Equity, and Jeffrey Oakman, Senior Policy Advisor to the Governor. They're joining us in the audience today on the phone and have both played a really integral role in the development of what we are ultimately proposing to the board this morning. Of course, I would be remiss not to mention the influential role that the late Lieutenant Governor Sheila Oliver has had on today's proposal. Lieutenant Governor Oliver co-chaired the Wealth Disparities Task Force established in 2019, and it is with her leadership and the work of members such as Tim Sullivan that it began to seek remedies to address the wealth gaps that currently exist among Black and Latino New Jerseyans. Among the recommendations from the task force was having the state establish a means to incentivize and create opportunities for employee ownership models, and so our team back in April issued an RFI to gain an understanding of the current employee ownership ecosystem in New Jersey, and we received responses which not only informed us of the benefits of such models, but also laid out the barriers to entry for businesses aspiring to become employee ownership businesses. Chief among these barriers was the lack of general understanding around employee ownership models, the substantial funding needed to embark on these endeavors, and the complexity of navigating this burgeoning niche industry. As such, the School of Rutgers School of Management and Labor Relations was a respondent to the RFI, and they provided great detail on the employee ownership ecosystem in New Jersey. They pointed to historical, recent, and ongoing research that they have conducted on the matter and demonstrated their strong partnerships with national and regional employee ownership associations and institutions. The school also houses the Institute for the Study of Employee Ownership and Profit Sharing and the New Jersey New York Center for Employee Ownership. Their expertise is well regarded in the industry, and we are requesting authorization to enter into this MOU with Rutgers. Under the MOU, the school will host several informational sessions for interested parties, provide subject matter expertise for the aforementioned program development, develop an eligibility tool so that businesses can kind of walk through the optimal scenarios for employee ownership transitions, create market educational materials, and conduct follow-up surveys for participants through the program. You can find a more detailed explanation of the scope of work in your packets. And as I alluded to earlier, and as the chairman mentioned, we do expect to return to the board in the last quarter of the year to identify remaining uses of the funding for the Wealth Disparities Initiative, including an RFP and an ESOP on an ESOP technical assistance program and an MOU for the creation of a supply chain diversity marketplace, also with Rutgers through their school business. And those are both in development currently. And with that, I will end my remarks and pause to answer any questions.
Just a couple of quick notes for questions or comments from the board. One, this is really important, and thank you for mentioning and invoking the late great Lieutenant Governor Oliver, her leadership here and her commitment to not just this issue, but lots of issues around equity and inclusion is her legacy. It's one of her many legacies. The other thing I'd mention, just going back to the 2018 Stronger and Fairer report that the governor issued, or Stronger and Fairer strategy that the governor issued on October 1st of 2018, one of the touchstone goals of that program, of that plan, is narrowing income and employment gaps, wealth gaps, so cousin issue to that issue. But this is an integral part of our economic development strategy and a big part of the kind of fairer leg of the stool of the economic development strategy. Because this is not the only thing we're doing on that front by any stretch of the imagination, but a big and touchstone example of putting our money where our mouth is. That's a outcome and a goal that's making that a commitment of that plan was a really important signal of where we're heading and where we've gone. So,
good job presenting. Thank you, Brian.
Shout out to Michelle, her leadership in structuring this and thinking through all this, and to Janae and Jeffrey, if you're out there in the conference call land, I appreciate your support as well.
And shout out to a lot of the staff here. I've received a lot of help doing this and a lot of advisement, so I really appreciate all of the input that I have.
It's a really innovative solution if it can work, right?
Yep.
Are we aware of any other states who are doing this?
There are a few other states doing this currently, whether it be through tax incentive programs, grant programs. What we had to do to get a little bit creative with the funding that was available to us and the timing was a lot of other states have substantial initial funding in order to establish their own separate independent employee ownership office to kind of create and deliver on these programs. We had a little bit of a challenge, so we are utilizing Rutgers with their great expertise and their history, proven track record of in-depth knowledge and research on employee ownership structures to kind of expedite that process. Again, going back to kind of the challenge that we were faced, I think what other states are doing, we're doing a little bit more unique in that we're partnering with a research institution and a higher education institution in order to accomplish these things on an expedited timeline.
It just seems to make more sense to work with people who already know how to do it.
Right.
You know, why?
And we did do a national scan, and at least I did a few calls. And Marcia Nicole, at that policy perspective, was great in introducing us to a few of her contacts around the country that are engaged on these issues and super helpful in informing how both what to do and okay, so what not to do with what other, right. other folks have stepped in toes or other challenges.
I'd be happy to stay involved in this because I'm a big believer in ESOPs as an interesting tool. Any other comments, questions? Anyone on the phone, comments or questions? Okay, hearing none, could we hear a motion to approve?
Motion approved.
Thank you, Aaron. Second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Jenny. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion passes. Congratulations. All right, Jenny, you want to give a quick incentives committee report?
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The incentive committee met on July 2nd, and under consideration is an Aspire application for a review and approval on a construction project in Newark, as well as the staff presented a request for certification of unused or unredeemed credits in state fiscal year 2024 and carry forward increase to fiscal year 2025. We also have present five applications for digital media tax credits and individual calendar years for the NFL production, five NFL productions. And that was it. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Jane.
Sure.
All right. First is Matt on the film tax credit program certification of unused or unredeemed credits.
Oh, sorry. I skipped
Aspire. Okay. My bad. So excited. Annie, on the Aspire Award.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I am always excited to be here to advocate for the hard work that we do on the Aspire team, but I'm particularly excited today because we have a very special project, and I think you all will agree. We are seeking approval to award roughly $21.7 million in Aspire tax credits for a commercial project that is comprised solely of a health services center in the South Ward of Newark, located at 479 Clinton Avenue. This is Aspire's first health services center project and is defined in the rules as an establishment that consists of no less than 10,000 square feet devoted to health care or health services where patients are admitted or seek examination and treatment by one or more physicians, dentists, psychologists, or other medical practitioners, and is located in an incentive tract, a qualified incentive tract, a municipality with a municipal revitalization index distress score of at least 50 or a distressed municipality. And since it's a commercial service project that meets all of the criteria I just mentioned. The project is not subject to a net benefit tax. The applicant is proposing the ground-up construction of a 46,000-square-foot four-story building that will include medical health space for a federally qualified health center that will be operated by St. James Health, Inc. Patients will have access to doctors, nurses, nurse practitioners, licensed social workers, and other support staff. And for those who don't know, a federally qualified health center provides health services like preventative dental, medical, and health care, hospital, and specialty care, and are located in under-resourced communities. They are facilities that qualify for funding under Section 330 of the Public Health Services Act, and they offer a sliding fee scale as they also qualify for enhanced reimbursement from Medicare or Medicaid. The Wellness Center will also consist of space dedicated to maternal health that will be operated by Safford Healthy Beginnings, a program under the SLIPIN initiative that focuses on improving maternal health outcomes and supports women who are pre- and postpartum. Expectant mothers will have access to OBGYNs, midwives, doulas, nurses, and other health practitioners. Programs will be offered like childbirth education, certified lactation counseling, and breastfeeding classes. There will also be community health workers that track the health of new mothers and babies up to 5 years old. And they will also offer doula certifications to residents with live in-house training in partnership with Beth Israel, and partnership with University Hospital are underway. Additionally, the Wellness Center includes physical health space that will offer physical therapy and nutrition services, a group therapy community space where the healthcare providers from the medical and maternal spaces will conduct group therapy classes, patient training, Lamaze classes, and health information sessions. There'll be a pharmacy and administrative offices and conference rooms for program staff. Ownership of the applicant is represented solely by the Safford Alliance, doing business as Safford Promise Neighborhood, aka SLIPIN, a nonprofit organization based in the South Ward of Newark that aims to support families and children by providing access to quality education, food, housing, employment, and physical and mental health resources. The total development cost for this project is $46 million. To help size the award, we excluded costs that are prohibited by statute and program rules, including land, developer fees, and other costs in excess of the 20% cap on soft costs. And this brings the total eligible project cost to about $36 million. And the required developer equity contribution of 20% is equal to $9 million. And in this case, the developer is contributing $15.3 million, exceeding the minimum requirement. We subject the applicant's request to the program's award cap, and since the project is located in an enhanced area, it's eligible to receive up to 60% of eligible costs, or $90 million, whichever is less. And that is how we arrived at the $21.7 million award. $21.7 million. To help further size the award, we looked at the project's rate of return. And in this case, we used the hurdle rate provided by JLO. And with the benefit of the Aspire tax credit, the equity IRR is 7 inches below the hurdle rate for comparable health service development of 19%. If we could just go back to the renderings of the project. As you can see here on the right, this is what is currently existing on the site, which is the blighted former furniture store that is no longer operational, hasn't been for some time. And then to the left is what the Wellness Center will be once construction is complete. I come here as a member of the Aspire team, but also as a lifelong worker and a current resident of the South Ward. And so I really understand the importance of this project and what it's going to mean to these communities. Part of creating a solution is first recognizing some hard truths, like the fact that in New Jersey there are some pretty alarming statistics around racial disparities for Black maternal health care. And that's particularly why projects like this are so important and necessary in combating those statistics. And prioritizing Black maternal health care in a predominantly Black neighborhood. I know that the EDA is a major advocate for maternal health, and so supporting this project will continue to promote equitable and sustainable health care in New Jersey. And so for those reasons, we recommend an Aspire Award for this project.
Let's talk
about the IRR
calculation.
Who's going to vote against it? Any comments, questions, anyone on the phone, comments or questions?
It's well done, that's all. Well done.
Thank you.
Can I hear a motion to approve?
Happy to move it.
Second?
I'll second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, refusals, or abstentions? The award is approved. Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right, now on to the Film and Digital Media Tax Credit Program Certification of Unused or Unredeemed Credits. It's usually much easier to follow Aspire, but we'll talk about dollars. The members are asked to approve the certification of unused and unredeemed film and digital media tax credits for state fiscal year 2024. And increase the tax credits available in state fiscal 2025. The Film and Digital Media Program Statute directs the authority to certify any unused and unredeemed tax credits for each category in a given state fiscal year, which will then be used at the authority's discretion to increase the annual cap for the subsequent fiscal year for each of those categories. The statute also requires a non-discretional reallocation of $250 million from the Aspire and Emerge FIP program cap allocations to the studio partner bucket, as well as $250 million for the film lease production company bucket in fiscal years 23, 24, and 25. If you remember, most recently, back in February, we did this to increase the 24 allocation from the certification of 2023. In 2024, you'll see on the slides some of the numbers to make it easier to digest. We had a starting cap of $138.8 million. We had 32 approvals for $132 million, and we had one project certify at a lower than its approved amount for a total unredeemed amount of $60,800. So the total unused or unredeemed amount for 24 was $6.8 million, which we will then use to increase the next year's cap, including the $100 million that we get as the allocation, for a total starting of just over $106.8 million. Moving to studio partners, we have had still limited activity under these next two buckets. The cap starting for the year was $950 million. There were no approvals. So when you include the $150 million allocation as well as the $250 million swap from Emerge and Aspire, we have $1.3 billion for this year for that category. Similarly, with Film Lease Production Company, the bucket there was also not used for the fiscal year, as we have yet to have any applicants under that project. We started the year with $750 million for the fiscal year, had no approvals. When you, again, swap in the Aspire money, as well as the annual allocation for this year, we have $1.1 billion for that category. For digital media, for 2024, the cap started at $107.1 million. We had two approvals for just over $10.1 million. When you carry that forward and include the $30 million allocation, we're going to start fiscal year 2025 at nearly $127 million. Staff is recommending the board approve the certification and carry forward of the unused and unredeemed amounts to increase each category for the current fiscal year. This would require just one vote.
And Matt, just the AYON project, that was an Aspire award, correct?
They have applied and... Yeah,
they have an Aspire approval, and they have an approval to use the right-hand category.
So they will. The folks that use their space will ultimately come in under the Film Lease Production Company allocation. So once that gets built out, we'll see application under that category. There was changes in the law last week, which will allow some folks in certain scenarios to take space there and actually come in early before the space is built out to come in under that bucket. We have Netflix and Lionsgate under the studio partner side. Both of those are under construction, but there's provisions in the law that allow their projects to also come in now. And I know that Netflix and Lionsgate are targeting projects currently. There's a little bit of uncertainty with the pending IATSE and teacher strikes where we've seen some slowdown, but we do anticipate those to pick up if those negotiations go through.
Again, they own was Inspire.
Yes.
Inspire and they have two approvals.
Yes.
They have a license to operate a film lease production facility, and then they have Inspire for us to $400 million to build it.
So we do expect activity under these two unused programs.
We would expect significant activity, right? Yep.
Studio partner will start this year for virtually sure. Mm-hmm. We say sure, and Netflix is going to start. Film lease, a little bit more up in the air, but certainly could be some fiscal 20, whatever year we're in that fiscal 25 activity.
And certainly once they're fully built out, you know, they could be doing hundreds of millions of dollars in productions per year.
It's good stuff.
But again, this is what we're approving today is just carrying forward.
Yeah, just moving into the we'll use it this year. Yep.
The two items there that say FY25 emerge, aspire, reallocation are both firm. That's a discretionary decision.
Yep.
This body. One more. What you're essentially doing is certifying that what we spent in 24, what we have left over.
The calculation is correct.
Yeah.
But you're also sending a message that we're here for you, too, to this business.
Yeah.
What was that, Chris?
We're sending a good message out there that, hey, we're open for business.
Yep.
No.
Okay, any further questions, comments? Anyone on the phone, questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Motion.
Thank you. Second?
I'll second.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, any recusals, opposition, or abstentions? None heard. The motion passes. All right, Matt, on to the tax credits.
Thank you. EDA staff has completed the review and recommends the approval of 5 applications under the Digital Media Tax Credit Program for NFL Productions, LLC. We have received written confirmation from an outside firm prior to review the budgets to make sure they are reasonable for industry standards. The Digital Media Tax Credit offers a 30% base credit, increasing up to 35% on expenses incurred through South Jersey vendors, calculated based on a business's qualified digital media production expenses incurred over the course of a given fiscal year. Like the film credit, there's also the 2% diversity bonus available for businesses who focus on hiring women and minorities to work on the digital media content. The statutory program allows for the applicants to apply for each of their fiscal year they incurred eligible expenses going back to the start of the program, which was in July of 2018. The applications for consideration today are for NFL Productions LLC's digital media expenses incurred over fiscal years 2019 through 2023. Total credits utilized under the digital media program is just over $51.3 million across submissions, which represents just over $160 million in qualified spend. Each project included a 2% diversity bonus as well. I will note the submission for the 2019 fiscal year, which for NFL Productions LLC runs April to March, which to match similar to the football calendar, only includes expenses after the effective date of the program, which was July 1st of 2018. NFL Productions LLC was originally founded as Blair Motion Pictures by New Jersey native Ed Sable in 1962. The National Football League purchased the business in 1964 and rebranded it as NFL Films. Sable continued to lead the business until his death in 1985 when his son Steve took over as president of the company, which he ran until he passed in 2012. The company has been headquartered in South Jersey and Mount Laurel since 1975. They currently have over 200 full-time jobs with an average salary of over $200,000, and they bring in part-time and seasonal jobs around 300 each year. This New Jersey headquarters serves as the post-production hub for all of NFL film productions, including content like NFL Films Presents, Hard Knocks, Inside the NFL, and Good Morning Football, as well as online-specific digital content. Also beginning in 2022, the company has began transferring its extensive analog library of NFL game footage into digital formats. The submissions have been combined into one resolution requiring only one vote. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
So again,
it's a Hard Knocks narrator as well.
And Matt, just to be clear, this is going back to 2019. The program allows people to go back to the beginning of the program in 2018 to claim credits.
Yes, this is true under film as well. So if you had happened to have filmed a movie at the end of 2018, the program became active, you'd be eligible for credit.
You could still do that.
Yes.
Okay. Any comments, questions? Anyone on the phone, comments or questions? Hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Motion approved.
Thank you. Second?
I'll second.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any approved, recusals, or abstentions?
Hearing none, the credits are approved. All right, next, Kathy on the foregoing authority matters. Next is Kathy on an application fee waiver for the New Jersey Green Workforce Training Grant Program.
Good afternoon, dear members of the board. On April 10th, 2024, the EDA board approved the New Jersey Green Workforce Training Grant Challenge, a competitive funding opportunity for entities that can implement workforce training programs that will position New Jersey residents for green economy careers, with a particular focus on advancing diversity, equity, and inclusion and serving New Jersey's overburdened community. The board has requested to approve an amendment to the grant challenge to waive application fees. Per EDA rules, the board may waive application fees when other sources of funding are available for the authority's administrative costs. The authority's administrative costs for the grant challenge will be covered by utilizing funds from the Green Council MOU between EDA and the DEP dated March 28, 2024, which the board authorized use of as a funding source for this grant challenge at the April 2024 board meeting. The MOU allows up to $150,000 or 3% of the MOU's total $5 million in funding to be used by the EDA to cover administrative costs for programs funded through the MOU, including the grant challenge. This $150,000 will be used to cover the administrative costs of the grant challenge and is sufficient to cover anticipated administrative needs. As such, the board is requested to approve an amendment to the grant challenge that authorizes EDA to not charge an application fee. Thank you for your time, and I would be able to take any questions that you may have on this amendment.
Just real quickly, great job, as always, by Kathy. Admittedly, this is an odd item. This would have been one of 10 or 15 items included in a board memo that approved the program originally. It got left on the cutting room floor for whatever reason. We do things by the book, so we are coming back here for you. What would have been a fairly modest, probably not discussed element of a program that was previously approved, and so we're back. And this now stands all by itself because we forgot.
Got it. Any questions, comments? Anyone on the phone, questions or comments? So hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
You got it.
Dragon motion.
I'll consider that second, Jim.
Yes.
All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion is approved. Next, Christine Baker.
I think I can say good morning. Just,
yeah, you're just under the wire.
So the good news is this is the last live voting item. The better news, it's short. In 2019, we retained the law firm of Friedman Kaplan to represent the EDA in connection with investigations that were initiated by the Governor's Task Force on EDA Tax Incentives and the Attorney General's Office. The scope of work included providing ongoing advice and counsel with regard to those investigations, as well as any litigation or other matters that ensued. Today, we're asking the board to approve a $500,000 increase in Friedman Kaplan's DCAP. A representative of the firm is available today and can answer any questions about the work, their work, in executive session. Happy to answer any questions.
Any questions or comments? Anyone on the phone? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve the increase in the fee cap?
I'll move it.
Second?
I'll second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposals, refusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion passes. Tim, board memoranda.
In the interest of time, I'll be extremely brief. You have seven board memos in your pack about delegated authority, and they do kind of reiterate or ratify the notion that we have a lot that goes on at these meetings, and the clock tells us a lot has gone on at this meeting, but a lot happens in between you leveraging the delegated authority that the board has given to staff and me, highlighting a range of things, including rights of entry and PUST program, which is something we do in great partnership, and HCSRF partnership with Commissioner Lasseret and Elizabeth over at DEP, so appreciate their support. Happy to answer any questions, but we do have a contemplated executive session here, so be brief.
Any comments or questions for Tim? Okay, hearing none, I'd now like to request a motion to enter executive session regarding a confidential matter to receive attorney-client advice, the minutes of which will become available when the need for confidentiality no longer exists. Could I hear a motion?
Motion, Fred Dumont.
Thank you, Fred. Second?
I'll second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor of executive session, signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
The opposed approvals or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, we enter executive session. Thank you, everyone, for attending.
For those keeping score, the jump
on. The jump day, that was great.
Thank you. Thank you.
Before we now enter executive session, for the members of the line, board members and staff will return to the line when executive session has been completed.
Ladies and gentlemen, those of that you that are still on the line, please hold. You will be not hearing any music, so it will be silent until we rejoin the line. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, please continue to hold the line. Thank you for your patience. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Please continue to hold the line. Ladies and gentlemen, we thank you for your patience. Please continue to hold the line. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your patience. Please continue to hold the line. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for holding. Please continue to hold the line. Ladies and gentlemen, we do appreciate your patience. The board is still in executive session. Please continue to hold the line.
Retired, but every so often he sends conflict checks, so
I'm
still doing
I work quite closely with him for a while, so give him my regards.
I know. It's back.
Back in the wireless days.
Yeah, thank you.
Now I'm
here. Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Meeting is adjourned. Thanks, everybody. Have a great summer. See you in September.
Happy summer, everybody.
Good stuff, everybody. Really
good. Thank you. Good to see everybody.
Kenny, I'll give you a call.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation. We're using AT&T conferencing service.